and wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we are so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run. We're going to help the only way we know how, by being in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week, ExpressVPN and Third Love. They're bringing the show to you, DLC, of course, the show, all about games and their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I am joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who's always money in the bank, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, dear audience. We gotta confer on these sometimes. Like, I think I know this one.
It's a wrestling reference. It's WrestleMania weekend.
That's what I assumed. So, yeah. And it's rainy there, so I will add that. But we can do a little better, I think. We can just give me.
No, I want to keep you on your toes. You got to see, I see how you bob and weave. You know,
see how I bounce off the ring there thing.
Yeah, I like how 8 years in, you're like, maybe we should confer on these. I got a new idea. We got a big show for you, ladies and gentlemen. It is it's gonna be a fun one. We got games to talk about, we got news, of course, and we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week, oh man, I'm excited because DLC stands for developing a lineage that's contemporary. Because we have the modern vintage gamer himself, Demetris Giannakis, is with us. Hey, Demetris.
Hey, what's going on, Christian? And Jeff, thank you for having me on, man. That was a hype intro. I've never been introduced like that before, so I'm pumped, man. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's our pleasure. It's my job to pump, so I'm glad we're pumped. Let's keep the pump train going forward and start the show the way we always do. No, you know what? No. I'm not going to start the show yet because I have a couple of questions for you, because not only are you the modern vintage gamer, you're also a game dev.
I am.
And you're working on some stuff that I think is pretty fascinating. And I wanted to maybe ask you a few questions about it, if you're cool with that.
Sure. Absolutely. Go ahead.
The first is, because you work at Night Dive and System Shock is being remade. I heard a little birdie on the internet in the form of a tweet say that System Shock, there will be a version that supports VR.
Yes, there will be a version that supports VR. Your information, your little birdie is 100% correct. There will be a VR version.
I'm very excited about this. I just wanted to tell you I'm very excited about this. It's not going to be at launch though, right? Is that the idea?
No, that's not my understanding. It's not going to be at launch, but it's definitely something that's in the works, and stay tuned. I'm sure we'll have more to announce with that particular version.
All right. Very cool. I'm so excited for that. But I'm curious about a classic like System Shock, remaking it, working on that. What has that experience been like?
Well, for full transparency, there's two teams that work at Night Dive. There's the Kex Engine developers, which is where I work.
Okay.
And there's also the System Shock team. So I'm not actually part of the System Shock team, but I do actively get involved in the testing and some of the QA stuff, just helping them out with, you know, getting that game across the line and shipped out the door. So I am, you know, I am playing the game, I am testing the game, but I'm not actually game devving in that space. But, it's definitely something that the whole company is, you know, actively playing and looking at the moment.
And we're close, right? I mean, there's been a demo. It sounds like the game is relatively close.
Yeah, I think over the summer it should be out the door, and we're all very excited. And I've been playing some internal builds, and it's awesome, man. It's going to be so cool if you're a System Shock fan. Obviously, people that are System Shock fans are looking very closely at this game, and they know what it's all about. But check it out if you're not sure what System Shock is. I think you'll really appreciate it. It's got all new bells and whistles as well, and it's it runs at 60 on most most, you know, medium spec PCs and 4K and DLSS and all that cool fancy stuff that you get with a modern PC experience. So definitely,
that's exciting. Yeah. I'm so excited.
The smooth and humble flex. I'm not working on it. I play it. I'm playing it. It's awesome. I'm playing it. It's 4K and it's great. But yeah, I'm not working on it. But anyway, meanwhile, Jeff's just like, it's in VR. And
I can't wait. I loved System Shock back in the day. It's a classic. So it's exciting that it's getting the modern treatment. You know, I think that's going to be really, really fun.
Well, that's what we do at Night Dive. I mean, that's the MO of the company is, you know, bringing back these old obscure games from the depths, literally. And, you know, that's what we do and that's what we love to do.
Yeah. And I think that's great. I mean, a lot of this stuff is trapped by, you know, old technology, and the ideas were sound, the concepts, the stories, the even the mechanics in a lot of cases were really solid and fun, even with the limitations of the hardware back in those days. And to be able to bring that stuff forward to folks that maybe weren't alive then or didn't play it, or even those of us that remember it fondly. I think it's a great, I mean, it's cool that video games are in that place now where we can remake these classics and make them look and play better.
Absolutely. Agree. And that's honestly, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I signed on and joined that company. I love, you know, gaming in the 90s, you know, that was my bread and butter, you know, big box PC gaming. So, I mean, that's what we do. We basically, you know, scour video games for licenses for old IP. And if we get them, then, you know, look out, world, because we usually like to remake those games.
Fantastic.
And speaking of big boxes, sorry, Jeff. I mean,
no, go ahead.
I think it was Shane. I forget where I saw this. It's like a thread going on Twitter recently. And, you know, within the last 5 years, Jeff, recently. But those 90s PC boxes, brick and mortar be danged, you know, like those things were unruly. It was like some of them were puzzles to open. It was like a triangle attached to a sphere with a crystal skull on top, and you're just like, how do you put this on a shelf?
Yeah, we went from like Electronic Arts's flat, almost like a record album look, to everything got real big and chunky and boxy, and you'd open this big thing up and then there'd be like these little 3.5-inch floppy disks inside it, you know.
I love that stuff. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that era, you know.
Yeah, me
just
too.
Just all the quirky, kooky looking boxes, and none of them were standard. They're all different sizes and shapes. And when you put them on your shelf, it's just kind of a mismatch. But I love it. I love that look.
Yeah. It's like walking through a Fry's. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the show and start the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love getting your comments, your questions, stories, whatever's on your mind. We love hearing from you at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. Or you can visit our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com, or our Discord, which is also 5x5dlc on the old Discord. But Demetrius, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider your story of the week?
I think the biggest one, even though the Sony Last of Us remake was, you know, rounded out the week, but for me, I think E3 is not dead is probably the one that really surprised me last week.
Yes, because we all thought E3 was dead. Right? We assumed it was dead. And here we go with an announcement that E3 2021 is happening. It's digital only, so it won't be an in-person event. I think probably wise, even though a lot of us are getting our vaccines and the world seems to be coming back in some semblance. But, you know, June seems pretty early to do an in-person event. So I think wise of them to have it be digital only. But as a digital online-only event, there will be a bunch of big-name companies that have signed on. There was an announcement this week from E3 saying that Microsoft, Nintendo, Take-Two, Konami, Capcom, and Ubisoft have all agreed to participate in this digital event. So we don't quite know exactly what that will look like, how that will work, if there will be playable demos involved, if there will be just a sort of a schedule of bespoke individual companies making presentations. how that will work at all. But Demetrius, I'm wondering what your take on this is. I mean, we still know that a lot of companies like Sony and Square Enix and Activision and EA and Sega are not going to participate, or at least haven't announced so far. Yeah. So what are you hoping for from this? And what's your takeaway? Do you think that this means that we'll see E3 continue beyond 2021?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, last year was obviously not a great year for the ESA, right? I mean, and not just for the ESA, but for video games in general, with basically every convention and show was canceled, including E3. And you did wonder, you know, how is the ESA going to respond, you know, to this? How are they going to get back? Because, look, last year we had the Summer Games Fest, right, which was, I guess, essentially just a running list of small bite-sized announcements and Twitter drops and presentations, and it was just a bit of a mess. You know what I mean? Like it didn't really kind of fill that void that E3, you know, had. Although, you know, we were getting information constantly over the summer and beyond, it just wasn't the same thing. And I think ultimately the ESA has come back and said, look, we know how to put on a good show. We've done this for many, many years. We've done this before. You know, we know how to do this. And this is kind of their step back into getting that show again. And yeah. I actually am a little surprised that they didn't cancel E3 again this year. So you have to give the ESA credit for, you know, mounting a show and getting it back, even though it is a fully digital show this year. But, you know, to answer, you know, the second part of your question, look, I do expect that E3, the way it was, will return next year, unless, you know, we've completely misjudged, life after vaccinations thing. But right. I do expect E3 to come back next year as a, you know, as normal. But look, you got to give them credit for, you know, trying to do something this year. I think last year was not great in general. And even though, you know, there are some big publishers that are not going to be a part of this show, I also think it is a good step back, you know, and trying to get the show back and get it back to some sort sense of, you know, relevancy again. Because I think the other part is that it felt like that they were maybe in some danger of just, you know, not being relevant anymore, because, you know, a lot of these publishers just turn around and say, look, we'll put on our own digital event. We don't have to pay millions of dollars to you guys to do right. this. We know we can do this ourselves. So why do we need the ESA anymore? But obviously they still have, a part to play in this whole thing. And I think, you know, even though there are some publishers that are not going to be here this year, I do expect to see that, you know, they'll start to trickle back and join E3 again, you know, in the coming years.
Do you, if E3 is basically just a bunch of individual companies doing their own branded presentations, but it's kind of grouped together under one week, is that enough? I mean, I guess that's what it was in the live version in a large sense.
Yeah.
So I guess that is enough, right? Just having it branded under E3 and having one week where it all happens.
Yeah.
Is enough, right?
I think so. I mean, there's two paths to this, because I mean, if you're at E3, you're getting the full E3 experience. But if you don't attend E3, but you just, you know, follow along with E3 on a live stream, you know, in previous years, this year probably won't feel any different, you know, watching it than it would if you, you know, on previous years, right? So I think if they kind of just, you know, if the format is like that, which I think it will be, then it really won't feel any different. I guess the only difference is that none of us are going to be there this year.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Christian, if E3 is back, you know what that means. The E3 bumper is back after a year off. We can bring it back, Christian. How about that?
I mean, it's the story of the week. That the bumper being back is the story of the week. That's what the people want to hear, man. The ESA has had a rough couple of years with, doxing everybody who attended the event.
Yeah, I was on that list, by the way.
Yeah, so was I.
Many of us were. I have moved, dear internet. I want to let you know. It's not hard to find my address now, but please know that's an old one. And then it had some other issues as well. But I agree with you both that I know – I'm trying to think how to say this. I know video game websites had a great year last summer because we were all at home clamoring for anything, you know, entertainment, media, news. I need to have all of it. But I personally got tired of looking for where these announcements were going to come from and like, whose week is it this week? Oh, I totally missed this indie thing because of this thing. And it just felt like constant, but also never a lot, if that makes sense.
You're saying the structure is valuable.
Yes. Yes, yeah. The structure is valuable. And while E3, even as an in-person event, had issues, I think, for a few years, I like that it brought the industry together. While I'm sure the ESA did not like EA doing their own thing 2 days before and Sony doing their own thing the same week, I understand, like, from a business dollar cent side of things, that was frustrating. But I like that it brought everything together as one kind of moment in gaming where – even aside from the old idea of like, well, USA Today is going to cover it or it's going to be on CNN, it was just a nice time where a lot of news would come together and people that already celebrate the hobby could celebrate it online and in person, but also, you know, online in big ways with fun hashtags. And it just felt like this communal event that I think last year was missing. As great as Summer's Game Fest was and the stuff that Keighley did, like, a lot of those things were interesting and valuable, and I hope they continue to grow. But I really missed that communal experience. And I hope, while I'm not like, you know, rah-rah ESA by any means, I hope that having an E3 event can maybe help bring that back.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's okay to like E3, but maybe not like the management, right? I mean, you know, yeah. They've definitely made some mistakes over the last few years. And look, the doxing thing is something that, even though it's been about 2 years since that happened, it's still something that really just doesn't sit well with a lot of people. And so I think, you know, E3, you can love E3, but you don't have to necessarily love the ESA.
I agree with that. Yeah, and I think that it will feel different than last summer. You know, we did get the Summer of Games and we got all these different companies doing their disparate little presentations, and it was great. But I do think this, I do agree with you guys that the structure is valuable and having it all be part of 1 week. And, you know, I think the Nintendo directification of the industry is fascinating and has been valuable to a certain extent in the sense that information comes at a quicker clip, I think. But also, when you have a Nintendo Direct, it's not necessarily special because you don't know exactly what they're – it can be for a very small tidbit of information. It's not these momentous, big milestone moments that E3 and other show events are throughout the calendar year. And I think that, from my perspective, is more fun when you go, oh my gosh, there's going to be – all of the big information is going to hit at these, you know, at Tokyo Game Show and Gamescom and E3, like these big tentpole moments throughout the year. I find that to be more fun and not like, oh, every couple of months there's a new Nintendo Direct and maybe it's just all a deep dive on the new Smash Brothers DLC. You know, it just doesn't feel as momentous. So I like that structure, and I hope we get back to it in some sense. But also, you know, I think an online-only E3 is tricky because, for me, a lot of what E3 was and what made it special was finding these little, you know, diamonds in the rough, these gems that aren't part of the big presentations, but you're wandering around the show floor or you have some appointment with a PR company that you fit in between these, you know, the bigger companies, and you find these wonderful takeaways that you didn't even know existed before E3. And I think actually the Summer Game Fest did a pretty good job of doing that in a virtual form, because there were so many demos that maybe you could download a demo of a game you hadn't heard about, and it would wow you that way. It's a more difficult thing to pull off online. So like you, Demetrius, I hope that the E3 that we know and love, even if it's not, know, even if it's a shadow of its former self, even if it doesn't have Sony and Activision and all these companies that pulled out before COVID even happened, I hope we still have some semblance of it, because I think there's value in it as a thing, as a place where a lot of these unknown or you know, overshadowed titles can have a moment in the sun as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, we also have to consider the companies that will be there, and obviously the two platform, you know, makers, Microsoft and Nintendo. You know, I think with enough, you know, big companies that are going to attend E3, maybe I'm a little naive in thinking this, but I do think that some of these companies will start to trickle back to E3, because, you know, if you've got Microsoft on stage and you've got Nintendo, you know, with a direct on, at E3 and then a treehouse, I think these other companies like Activision and maybe Bandai Namco, Sega, Square Enix, you know, maybe they feel like, well, you know, we're missing out on this. We need to be back there, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, Sony has not been at E3 for, I think it's the third year now, or maybe the fourth year that they're not showing. And, you know, I think they're a different animal altogether. But the other companies, I feel like they're like, you know, they're sitting out this year because it's a digital show. But I also feel like it's only a matter of time if, you know, they do mount E3 next year as just a normal show, as we're expecting to see, and Microsoft and Nintendo will be there, and Capcom and Ubisoft will be there, then I do expect that, you know, Square Enix, Bandai Namco, EA may start to return to the fold.
Yeah, I hope so. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, if those companies, you know, like a Square Enix has a presentation that just happens to be around the second week of June, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yes, it's not part of E3, but it's kind of like what EA has been doing the last few years, you know, is we're not part of E3, but we have this thing that's happening in Los Angeles in June. You know, it's ultimately to the end user, not that different. So,
yeah. And I think, you know, Microsoft, they're at the Staples Center, which is literally right across the street from the convention center. So it's almost like it's just convenient that they just have something there, right?
Yeah.
Even though they are technically a part of E3, but it's also very convenient for them because they are literally right there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Christian, it's enough that we got the bumper back. That's all that really matters, is that we get to play the bumper again.
That's all we need.
Yeah. Although the Summer of Games bumper was pretty good, too.
What's the bumper?
Oh, it's the little piece of music that they call them bumpers. Yeah. They bump between content.
Got it.
Yes. Sean Madigan and his lovely wife composed that for us, and we love it. All right. So, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
Well, there are two biggies left, and I feel like they kind of dance on opposite ends of a similar spectrum, or two sides of a coin, perhaps. Because we've mentioned it already, I will dive in on this Last of Us remake for PS5 and some of the bigger news that I guess has come out around Sony, which I don't want to spend time on this, Jeff, but, you know, the Kanosticator and Spice Radames, like, we get some stuff right.
Yeah, we do, baby. Yeah, we do.
Also really mess up MLB the Show.
We did.
We spent 20 minutes
last week talking about the ramifications of MLB the Show being on Xbox Game Pass. And then it comes out this week that Sony's like, yeah, no, we didn't want that at all.
It was MLB.
We're like, what could it mean? You know, Sony pulling these moves, doing this thing. And it's like, no, they were like, what? We were just as surprised as anybody.
Yeah. I mean, all I read was just that it was like the headline was just, it's MLB did that. And you and I texted each other immediately and we were like, well, we whiffed on that one. So,
yeah.
You know,
apologies, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes
core inch prediction. We run with
the information we have at the moment.
We had no idea. This is the, I guess, a bigger story potentially, originally coming out of Bloomberg, I think. And it's kind of this, which Sony has talked about for a while, their approach to blockbusters. They are making these big tentpole games. There's been talk before about how Game Pass wouldn't work for them because of the model they're going for. It's not sustainable with these big tentpole first party games. And then now it seems like that approach is potentially angering. Again, remember what we said about MLB last week. So please know, now when I start saying my feelings, these are just my feelings, probably wrong. But there has been a lot of, at least a handful, more than a handful of devs leaving from internal studios and kind of striking out on their own, or just post tweeting like, today's my last day, I'm forever grateful kind of thing. And if you, you know, want to connect those dots with a tinfoil hat on or not, it seems like there is some reaction internally from developers about this approach to only going for these big blockbusters, be it studios that wanted to make their own IP or make a sequel to Days Gone, being told, no, you're going to work on a Last of Us remaster, which don't get me wrong, I'd play the crap out of. Someone said, as you're rolling your eyes at, where did I see this? Maybe it was on Reset Era. Someone said, like, as you roll your eyes at the idea of a Last of Us remake, just remember the Resident Evil remake on GameCube was one of the best of all times, and it came out 6 years after the first Resident Evil. And I was like, oh, yeah, dang. That was a heck of a remake on GameCube. So, whatever. I love The Last of Us. I'll take a remake. But the story here is, I think, this division, potentially, within these studios and what maybe this Sony mandate for exclusive big blockbusters is creating, and devs maybe wanting to make their own thing. I mean, Sony has kind of swung from the place of quirky indies to Horizon, God of War, Last of Us in some respect. And I think this is big news that, again, a few years from now, we could look back on as an inflection point for them as a company.
Yeah, just to frame the story clearly so that folks understand all the ramifications, I think you're absolutely right that it's a really interesting trend internally at Sony's first party. But the reporting from Bloomberg was that Sony Bend, which is the developer that made Days Gone, had pitched a sequel to Days Gone, I think before the first game even came out.
And tentatively called Weeks Gone.
Yeah, it was going to be the Months Gone, and then it was going to be, you know, like, wow, where's all the time?
One year gone.
You know, keep it incremental. That's just life. anyway, then the game came out, did not do great. And so Sony said, no, we don't want a sequel to Days Gone. And they put them on, evidently, they put them on a version of Uncharted that supposedly, at least on paper, might still be happening. We don't know that. Evidently, the reporting at Bloomberg says that Naughty Dog is now overseeing the Bend working on an Uncharted game, which is fascinating. And this Last of Us remake for PlayStation 5. So, a lot to digest here, Demetrius. What's your take on the moves? Oh, and of course, the thing that Christian brought up was that a number of the top folks at Sony Bend decided to leave because they had wanted to work on their own game.
Days Gone 2. If we link the stories, folks from Japan Studios also left. Yeah.
So, what do you make of all this? It's pretty messy, but. You know, walk us through your thoughts.
I mean, Sony was that company, PlayStation is that brand that had just this amazing legacy. And you touched on it, the quirky kind of indie games, the smaller games, the Gravity Rushes, the Patapons, Loco Rocos, you know, all that really cool artistic stuff that came out from Japan. Unfortunately, none of it really sold very well, you know, and that's a real shame because many of those games are just so great, you know. You think about Japan Studio, they also did, you know, Ico, and they did Shadow of the Colossus, and all those just amazing Sony games that made you love PlayStation for what it was, right? And look, I think what's happening here is, you know, those smaller games or those games that just, you know, didn't sell well are just being, you know, tossed to the side in favor of these big blockbuster games that you mentioned. And look, it's no surprise as well that, or it's no coincidence, I should say, that, you know, many of these games that Sony are making right now, like The Last of Us Part 2 and Ghost of Tsushima, have movies or TV shows attached to them as well, right? So
yeah,
feels like that. They're shifting their vision to these, you know, big blockbuster games only, And unfortunately, the real sad part is, you know, the people that, you know, have tried to mount something internally, you know, a Last of Us sequel or, you know, Days Gone sequel, the Uncharted game, have not survived this because, you know, the message now seems to be we're only focusing on the big stuff. You know, we don't have we don't have the budget, you know, for you guys because it's not part of our vision. And I think the real, you know, the sad part of this whole story is just the people that have left the company. Many people that, you know, worked at Sony Japan or Japan Studios for you know, pretty much since the inception of PlayStation are no longer with the company. And, you know, the people that are left, Bend, you know, have been veterans of the company as well for many, many years, have left the company. I think that's the real sad part of this whole thing is the human side. Mm-hmm. And look, as far as what I think about a Last of Us remake, I will tell you, I love The Last of Us. I love the first game and I love the second game. I thought, you know, there was a lot of, obviously last year, The Last of Us Part 2 was a very polarizing game. A lot of people loved it and a lot of people, you know, did not like it at all, right? I'm in the camp that I thought the game was a masterpiece. It wasn't perfect. Felt like it was probably about 5 hours too long. They could have, you know, they could have edited some parts out of the game. But I loved the game. I loved the whole story. So I think what they're going for with the remake of The Last of Us Part 2 is they want to – my idea is they probably want to put Part 1 and Part 2 as a collection exclusively for the PlayStation 5 and add the multiplayer and then have that as a nice, you know, bundle of the first game and the second game, you know, with some enhancements. So I think the idea of why would you remake The Last of Us for, you know, the PS5 does make sense to me, even though, sure, you can play it on a PlayStation 5 with the PS4 remastered version, and that still plays really, really well. I can see why that, you know, they would want to do that. But unfortunately, you know, it is very messy, you know, and I think ultimately it's just a real sad state of affairs, you know, seeing these people trying to do something, trying to get something happening, and only to be told, no, you can't do that. And then obviously leaving the company in just frustration or, you know, or what have you in that, you know, they just don't have a shot at making some really cool stuff. And that's what Sony was, you know, was always known for over the years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think you hit on a really interesting point that I think may explain this as well, which is, you know, they are this pan media company now. And we do know that there is going to be a Last of Us television series, a high profile, was it HBO or Netflix? It's a big
HBO.
Yeah, HBO. And so I could totally understand maybe wanting to have a remake of that game come out when the television series that's based on that first game, because that's what we've heard is that television series is going to be basically telling the story of that first game again. Makes a lot of sense. You know, Marvel likes to reboot characters that are about to have a big movie on the big screen. It just makes sense. People are excited to you know, The Witcher 3 got all these, a lot more people playing it after The Witcher TV series debuted. So synergy there, I think, might be part of the motivation. And I wonder, you know, as we've heard, the television series is going to expand the world a bit and tell a bit more side story and side characters from the timeline of the first game. I wonder if maybe a remake could incorporate some of that new material as well. That would be kind of cool. So you could play.
I mean, I think there is an opportunity to add content to the game and maybe align it with, you know, with the show in some more ways, and you know also just remove some of the quirky things about the game, because I mean it's a PlayStation 3 game. It's been around for a little while now, so
yeah,
they could definitely do that. You know, I think that's kind of cool. But you know, my biggest issue with all this is, look, I'm not faulting Sony for what they're doing, but I do absolutely miss the legacy. And in some ways, I feel like they are turning their back a little bit on their legacy and on their history, because, like I said, they've got such a expansive library of games and quirky IP that they seem like they're not really interested in making at the moment. At least that's what the story is, you know, the report is telling us. But my worry about this is, if you just focus on the big blockbusters, number one, The development time of these games is literally going to take 5 years, maybe more, you know, to get these games out, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, I think even bigger than that is I'm worried that it's going to be that formulaic, over-the-shoulder, you know, third-person style game. It doesn't matter what the setting is, what the story is about, but it's, you know, the games are kind of going to look the same as far as the way that they play, the way that they feel. And I hope Sony doesn't fall into that trap where they just make these, you know, these really cool, you know, experiences from a story perspective, but it's also kind of formulaic as well, you know,
yeah.
from a game perspective, from a game development perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that might be part of the reason that Days Gone didn't do very well, right? It maybe it was too similar to a Last of Us.
Yeah.
That's certainly plausible that, you know, these games, the third person action adventure with zombies, it starts, you know, cannibalizing itself a bit. Mm-hmm. And I think you make a good point there.
I wonder if, again, just speculation as we're kind of diving into this, by selling these exclusives, well, one, you can't find a box right now anyway if you wanted to try to buy a PS5. But by selling these exclusives, they are, you know, must-have Super Bowl commercial-style games, right? Like, hopefully get zeitgeist around them. Everybody's talking about it. You need to play it. It's going to consume a lot of media airspace and airtime. And so you feel like you need to be part of this discussion. So then you buy your PS5, and then Sony doesn't necessarily need to have a whole bunch of those games coming out. You know, they do take a long time to make, but because that's where the install base is and that's where all of the quirky indies are also then selling their games on, you know, on that console or on that platform. And since that's the console you have, you're going to buy Assassin's Creed on it, and they'll do like some marketing deal for exclusive DLC. Like, I could see how it makes sense from a commercial standpoint. I think it's an easy marketing message to say, if you want to play, you know, big game only on PlayStation versus the Xbox marketing strategy right now. And don't get me wrong, they are clearly going after some big games. I mean, that Bethesda deal is huge, among others. But it's kind of the Xbox thing is very consumer friendly right now. It's like, if you want to play the best version of a game, any of your Xbox games, buy the Xbox Series X. They all look amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, but what game am I playing on it? Any of them, literally any of them.
And also for $10 a month, right. You know, hundreds of them.
But so, you get that splashy thing of like God of War only on, it has that cachet. So I get it.
Well, I mean, that's anytime someone tweets at us, Christian, and says, hey, which console should I get? That's always the comparison you make is, well, do you like those Sony exclusives? Do you want to play Spider-Man and Horizon and God of War? And like, do you want to play those games? If so, that's the only place to play them. You don't really say that about Microsoft, although, like you said, that may be changing very soon. So, it is interesting. It's an interesting strategy, but I do think we lose some of that. You know, Demetrius is so right that in those previous generations, you would have those, you know, pixel junk Edens and all these like weird, fun, quirky games.
Catapon, even back to like Katamari before.
Yeah, you know,
there's
a
whole legacy of them.
Did you guys play Puppeteer at all on the PlayStation 3? That's one of my favorites.
No, I never played Puppeteer.
It's awesome. You got to check that one out.
Okay.
It's one of those games that's in danger of getting lost forever too, because obviously, you know, the PlayStation store is going down for the PS3.
Yeah.
But I would suggest you check it out if you want some nostalgia. It's so cool.
I guess you could say the that what was that graffiti game that came out this last year on PlayStation
5? Oh, Concrete Genie.
I guess that's sort of in that legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue maybe. And Dreams, I think, is basically their quirky game as well. All right. My story of the week is one kind of Christian was referencing a bit, is this interview with Nintendo president Shutaro Furukawa, who, again, we're going to be talking about this through translation, so it's possible some of this isn't translated exactly or getting the meaning he intended. He had an interview that was in Japanese, and there's a lot of interesting information about his perspective on Nintendo's strategy. And I guess the big pull quote out of this is that they want to make more new IP and not just focus on, quote, long sellers such as Mario and Zelda. He said, I myself am looking at and studying various forms of entertainment. In the future, we will focus on creating new game series as well as long sellers such as Mario and Zelda. They asked him about if there would be a new Switch. He was a bit cagey about that, saying that the determining factor will be whether or not it can create a new experience, which is, like, I guess, very much in line with Nintendo and what they've done before. If the new hardware creates a new kind of experience, which I think they have shown over and over, they're willing to take big risks on. But I ask you, Demetris, what do you make of this new IP thing? I think all of us who've been video game fans for a long time, I think always are excited about the idea of new IP. But also, you know, Nintendo does their thing really, really well. And I might argue that folks who are real Nintendo fans aren't lining up for the what was the boxing game with the Extendo arms?
My brain
arms. I can't even remember the name. I just said it. I mean, arms is an example. And some of these, I don't know if people are really looking for that. Am I off base, do you think?
No, I don't think you're off base. I mean, I think it's an interesting interview to read. Furukawa is an interesting man because I think he's probably the first president that, I don't want to say, you know, does things his own way and doesn't really respect, you know, the previous presidents, because that would be a wrong thing to say. But it does seem like he's taking Nintendo in a new direction. I think previous presidents like Satoru Iwata, for example, you know, always had in mind kind of the, you know, the forefathers of Nintendo, like Yamauchi, for example, who, you know, was very, very influential and was around, you know, back in the early days of the NES and the Game Boy and all that stuff, right? So yeah. I think ultimately he's trying to pivot and change and pull Nintendo in a direction for, you know, for success for the future. So I don't necessarily disagree with what he's doing. And there are some, I guess, some franchises, some UIP that have been very successful for Nintendo. And the one that I think about would be like Splatoon, for example. That's something that has done quite well for them. Even though it did come out on the Nintendo Wii U, it wasn't exclusively for the Switch. So I think, you know, they can have success with new IP. But I think ultimately the direction I think they're going to take this is they'll try new things because I think they want to do that. But there's always going to be the staples, you know, the Marios and Zeldas. I mean, if I think about this year, you know, we just finished Mario's 35th on March 31st. Mario died on March 31st, as we know. But Donkey Kong has a birthday this year or an anniversary this year. Zelda has an anniversary this year. We expect, you know, more things to come out from Zelda. We were expecting something about Breath of the Wild 2 this year. I'm not saying the game's coming out this year, but you know, maybe at E3 we'll see a Breath of the Wild 2 trailer with the release date attached to it. There's also talk about, you know, the remakes of more Zelda games. Metroid also has an anniversary this year. So there's a lot of IP that's kind of, you know, sitting there that they can do things with. And I think I'm not saying that they're going to do all of that stuff, but they always are going to continue, you know, to go back and make sure that their long-standing series are, you know, being taken care of as well. So I think the Switch is a good enough system, and, you know, it's sold so many units that they can afford to start taking risks and looking at new IP, and, you know, and if it pays off for them, which most of the time it does, then they look like absolute, you know, geniuses. But if it doesn't, like an ARMS, I mean, ARMS wasn't a flop by any stretch of the imagination, but it's also something they have that buffer now where they can try new things. And if it, like I said, if it comes off for them, they look really good. With the Wii U, they didn't have anywhere near that ability to do that. You know, everything had to be perfect. And obviously we know how that ended up going for them.
Yeah. Christian, this is probably my favorite quote from the article. Furukawa says, quote, games are not a necessity of life. In order for customers to choose games in their finite time, they have to be interesting. Competition is tough, and I am not optimistic. again, through translation, so maybe it's not exactly the meaning he intended, but that makes me laugh, and I also share the feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, the time suck that TikTok can be, or even just texting your friends or Snapchat or whatever, you know, other thing that is competing for your time and your attention. I'm excited for Nintendo to explore new IP, assuming, you know, the truth to this. I love Splatoon. ARMS didn't flop only because they spring back to the body. Otherwise, I think they would have
flop. They just flop right to the ground there.
I think what Nintendo has done a lot of is different genre of games, but they put their stable of characters in them.
Right. So Mario Tennis and Mario Soccer and
Smash Brothers, Mario Golf, Mario's done everything, Mario Kart. And so I think in some regard, Nintendo has done a lot of new IPs, not the right word, but genres. You know, we were just talking about Sony, how right now they make my favorite type of game, the third person action game. A lot of different IPs doing that. You know, Jeff, you mentioned maybe that was a detriment, that it's too many IPs doing a similar thing. And while Nintendo has done the opposite, the same handful of IP doing everything, like every different type of thing. So it's weird where sometimes it feels stale. Other times it's very fresh. Even Zelda, you know, you look at like, oh, Zelda's a very old IP. But look how much it's changed over the 35 years that it's been in existence. You know, look what Nintendo did. And now they're, oh man, I didn't play enough of this. I literally only played one game, but Pac-Man 99, not Nintendo, but Mario 99, rest in peace. But like, they made a Battle Royale Mario game that wasn't what you'd expect. It wasn't Fortnite Mario. It was you playing Super Mario Brothers.
Well, I think that that's how they get people to pay attention to these other games, right? Is they stick Mario in it. And I don't think that's, I'm not criticizing them for that. I think that's probably smart, but I think that's why it's so interesting that he had this quote in this interview. He said, we want more IP, because I do think there is a bit of that response to things like ARMS or whatever. When they're announced, it's okay, yes, but where's my Metroid? Hmm. Okay, yes, but what's the next Zelda game? Okay, yes, but where's Mario? And I think that they're, you know, everybody expects those franchises to be the driving force. And perhaps there might be a bit of feeling that anything else is just filler between those things.
Yeah, I think they can break through that with just really great games. I think ARMS was light on content, so it's kind of easy to dismiss that in other ways. But, you know, we talked about if Astrobot was made by Nintendo, people would be shouting even from the higher hilltop, you know, than people are already raving about that game. And so I think there's room for them to do that with different characters and different genres and to make something new. And I'm excited to see them do it. I mean, the young talent, they're not that young anymore, but some of these young studios and developers at Nintendo that have been cutting their teeth on a lot of these properties over the years have to have new ideas, and I want to see them. To me, this is very exciting, and I'd rather have something new that the, you know, geniuses at Nintendo are passionate about than them saying, I guess we need to make another X. So I'm optimistic.
Yeah. Well, you may be, but I want a t-shirt that says competition is tough and I am not optimistic. That's brilliant. Brilliant quote.
I love it.
All right. Let's move on now and talk about the games that we have been playing. But first, I want to thank our sponsor, ExpressVPN. How did you choose which internet service provider you use? Well, let me guess. It was the only one you had available, because the sad thing is most people have very little choice, because the ISPs operate like monopolies in the regions that they serve. And then they use that monopoly power to take advantage of their customers sometimes, you know, data caps, streaming throttles. Yeah. The worst part is that many ISPs log your internet activity and then sell that data onto other big tech companies or advertisers. But to prevent ISPs from seeing your activity, one of the things I do is I use a VPN. And the VPN that I have been using for years is ExpressVPN. I used ExpressVPN well before they were a sponsor of this show, and I have found them to be the fastest and the easiest to use. So what is ExpressVPN? Well, It's an app, simple app for your computer or your smartphone or really any device. It encrypts all your network data and tunnels it through a secure VPN server so that your ISP can't see any of the activity, what you've been doing online. So you just think about how much of your life is on the internet. Every site you visit, every video you watch, every message you send gets tracked by your ISP and can be sold. You know, information about that can be sold. And that's the reason I recommend ExpressVPN. It's the best way to hide your online activity from your ISP. Just download the app, tap one button on your device, and then you're protected. And ExpressVPN does all this without slowing your connection. And that's the big one. That's why I picked ExpressVPN all those years ago, is because a lot of those other VPNs will have noticeable slowdown in your internet speed. It's also why ExpressVPN is rated number one, the number one VPN on CNET and Wired. So protect your online activity today with the VPN rated number one by CNET and Wired. Visit our exclusive link, expressvpn.com/DLC, and you can get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/DLC, expressvpn.com/DLC to learn more. All right, it is time to talk about the games that we have been playing this week. Demetrius, what is on your playlist?
Well, I've been playing Outriders because it was one of those day one games that dropped on Game Pass, which I love. I love that convenience of just having a new game to check out and play and not worry about buyer's remorse and stuff like that.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So Outriders is kind of cool. I don't know if you guys have taken a look at it, but it's a looter shooter in the style of Gears of War, but it's not as good as Gears of War, but it has that formulaic, you know, run and gun cover shooter associated to it. It's got a really kind of cheesy story, and the the third person action is quite cool. The cutscenes, they're okay. It's definitely not a AAA game as far as polish, but it's a dumb looter shooter, and I love it. I love that style of gameplay. So it's keeping me entertained for a while.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I feel like Outriders is really right place, right time. It is hugely successful right now. And I have a hard time comparing it to things like The Division or even Destiny and have it come out ahead. I feel like it does what it does pretty well. It's a darn good game, right? It's satisfying and fun, and the moment to moment is really well executed. But it doesn't. I don't think it shines in any particular way. And Christian might disagree with me here, but I feel like it is. It really is in this moment where there wasn't a lot of other stuff coming out, and it does what it does pretty well, and everybody can galvanize around this one game and play with our friends. And I think that's fine. Like, that's okay. It can be a just good game instead of a great game. But it's interesting because it's competing in a space against established great games that are all service games that are still going strong. So it's interesting that people are so driven to find a new experience that they're willing to give this game a shot. And I think a lot of it comes down to what you said to me, just, which is, I already own it. Yeah, I've already got it on Game Pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's also new as well, because I mean, you know, if I think about, and I used to play Destiny, the original Destiny game. I have not played Destiny 2, but if I think about starting and playing Destiny 2 right now, I just start feeling overwhelmed already, because I know there's so many DLCs, there's so many add-ons and expansions already, you know, and there's just so much you need to do to get established in a game like that. With something like Outriders, I mean, it's only been out for a little while, so it's something that, you know, anyone can jump in and start playing pretty easily.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think I've definitely experienced that myself, where I feel like I can't join this community that's been going on for years. But if there's a new game in the same genre, I'm like, oh, well, now I can be in on the ground floor. I've definitely felt that. I mean, that's why I got into Heroes of the Storm so big, because I was like, I was too late to Dota and I was too late to League. And I just felt like oh, here's a game coming along that does all those same things, and I can be part of its genesis.
Mm-hmm. I think too, and I agree with you that it is a lot of right place, right time, but I think part of the appeal for me, and as I've seen people playing the Diablo 2 technical alpha, I'm like, give me. Is that approach to this game where I'm still playing it. I'm still really enjoying it. I love the powers. I love how it compels. Like I said, it feels like an evolution of a Gears of War formula. I agree that it doesn't do some of the things that Gears does as well, because Gears, especially by 5 and Stormbringer? No, what's the last, that standalone DLC? So polished. Like, Gears has that formula down. And Outriders is messy at times. But I like how it kind of, like, the cover feels more for the enemies than it is for me. And I'm flying around, I'm using all my powers, but I'm taking my time with it because it's not, I don't feel as compelled to chase the current thing. Whereas on a lot of these live service games, it's like, well, if I do want to play with anybody, I should probably be doing what they're doing. I need to have the gun. Okay, well, you know, it's where my Fortnite addiction, it's like, well, there are two versions of Fortnite that I would play. One is the mode I liked the best, which is duos or trios, just playing with friends. And then there's the work. And I did a lot of the work where it's like, I don't really like big group games, but I can grind through a lot of these dailies, you know, like, and so I feel like those live services games often have that. And Outriders, as a more, you know, traditional, dare I say, looter shooter, it allows me to play it how I want, when I want. And if I do jump in with friends, it's fun to replay those missions because I'll get some cool gear and I don't mind jumping ahead a little bit. Because again, for me, the story isn't why I'm playing. So I think it does a lot right. And I think gamers were ready for that. And I think, as you mentioned, it's not a $70 or $60 purchase. So for people on the Xbox ecosystem, it's even more enticing. But all of that said, it did really well on Steam with purchases.
Yeah, it did. It was
number one paid on Xbox also. So
crushing. Yeah. They had more concurrence on Steam than Borderlands 2 did on its height, which is, that's huge. That's an established franchise at that point. You know, that this is a new IP. It's huge.
And it's had issues. Folks lost a lot of inventory, which is tragic in a game like this. And the server issues we talked about last week. But I do think this game is resonating for a lot of people that where these forever live service games take a level of work and commitment that it's nice not to have to always get into.
You also have to give credit to, you know, the development team of that game, because you're right. You mentioned the instability issues which kind of plagued the game in the first week, where you couldn't get connected and, you know, you couldn't, join your friends, and there was inventory issues and you lost some gear and stuff like that. I remember when The Division came out, the first one, that had a similar launch where it was just a buggy mess of a game and had all sorts of issues with connectivity. And that game really never recovered. But it seems like with Outriders, they've gotten past all that stuff now, and it seems like it's bigger now than it was. So they've somehow survived that storm, because that, you know, that first, you know, week of a launch of a new game is really make or break in many instances, but somehow they've come out of this stronger, which is really cool. And that's definitely a credit to them.
So you're saying they survived the storm and came out altered? Is that right?
Good one. Demetrius, what class are you playing in Outriders, if I may ask?
I'm playing the Trickster, which I think is kind of cool. Like, that's the one that he can, you know, teleport around, you know, the baddie and you know, shotgun in the face and all that sort of stuff. It's fun, man. I like it.
And Christian, what about you? What class are you?
I'm also a trickster. I pyroed at the demo a year ago, whenever that was, but I've really was drawn to the trickster. It seems to fit my play style, where I can slow down time if I get overwhelmed, but then also teleport around the map as I need to. Or there's I don't know the names of any of them, but there's one where you like drop a beacon and it busts your shield.
Yeah.
And then you activate it again and it brings you back to there. I love that ability, but man, I was disoriented the first few times I used it. So I'm like, wait, why? Oh, great. Yeah. Got it. But I think it's really, really fun. And I like that all of the builds are viable. I have friends that are playing Devastator, I think is the rebarb guy.
The tank one?
Tank two. Man.
Yeah, I've been tempted to roll up that character because it's not the description of the class isn't one that I usually respond to, but so many people have talked about how fun it is. I might give it a shot.
They were wrecking. They were higher level than me, but it was just like, oh, you are a god. I am a peon. It was really fun to see.
Cool. What else is on your playlist, Demetrius?
The other game I just started actually today was Oddworld Soulstorm on the PlayStation 5. This was obviously a part of the PS Plus thing, so I thought I'd download it and give it a try. I've heard
we got to give Sony enough the same credit we give Microsoft, right? Because this is a brand new game, brand new PlayStation 5 game that's out for free to any subscribers. So
yeah, I'm enjoying this one. I played older Oddworld games like Abe's Odyssey and Abe's Exodus back in the day on the Xbox and stuff, and it's great to go back and get into this world again because it's been a while since I've played an Oddworld game. I think it's reviewing well, and that was one of the reasons why I decided to check it out, and I'm having fun. I'm only probably about an hour or so into the game, but really, really enjoying it, and I definitely want to, keep playing it.
I have learned that I don't think these games are for me. Which is fine, but you got to give props to Learn Landing for being committed to this universe he created for so many years. It's pretty wild. But it brings up something for me because both this and Outriders, I think, have terrible beginnings, sequences, both of them just atrocious onboarding of the player.
That's a good point.
And it really bums me out because I was thinking this week about that because I played both the beginnings of both those games very recently. And I just felt like, in Oddworld, you are just forced to endure endless cutscenes that aren't really well made and kind of bringing you up to speed. If you haven't played these games, which are old games, it's not like you just came off of the last Oddworld game. But if you don't know the lore and you don't know who Abe is or what's going on, it's kind of meaningless. And there's so long before you do anything as a player. You're just watching things happen that are kind of cryptic and odd. And then once you do start playing the game, it's this kind of learn by dying thing in the opening sequence where you're running away from fireballs and stuff. And I just felt like, what? Don't hide your game behind this horrible first impression. And I feel like the same thing happened with Outriders. We talked about it a bit last week, where the beginning of the game is nothing like the rest of the game.
Right.
So it's not giving you an impression of what you're actually in for, and B, insufferable. I mean, it's truly difficult to get through like this endless lore spewing at you. And this week, after people were recommending it to me last week to play it again on PlayStation 5, I re-downloaded God of War from 2018. And it's interesting. My last save game is almost exactly 2 years ago. It was like the 14th of April, 2018, which I thought was pretty interesting. But man, the beginning of that game is perfect. I think it's one of maybe the best game, in my opinion, of all time, just on a pure design sense. But it brings you into that world so beautifully. The first thing you do is interact with the game. The first thing you do is you make Kratos chop that that tree down. You're interacting with the game, and it feels like a cutscene, but you're doing something. And that single camera, and you're guiding the character, and you're in the engine of the game immediately. It's telling you a story, but it's not making you just sort of sit back and watch a movie. And it made me think, what are the greatest beginnings to a video game of all time? I know I'm kind of putting you guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm with you, Jeff. I love the God of War intro. If there was ever a game that just pulled me in, it was that. But The Last of Us as well is, oh my God, that intro. I mean, I still just, get emotional when I watch that introduction. It's pretty hard to watch, but it's so good.
Another game where you're playing immediately, right? It's not asking you to sit and back and watch them set up the story. You're in it. You're involved. You're playing it. You're doing things. You're getting in that car. You're trying to escape. It's I think that is a mistake that way too many developers fall into, and I don't understand why it's so common to not give the player something interesting to do immediately.
It's the reason why there's been – sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
Let's just say Mario 1-1, JP in the chat said Mega Man X. Like, there's that legacy of that site. You know, it's like explain by doing, not by saying. And I think a lot of times because we have these gorgeous cutscenes, it's like, let's wow them with this thing. And it's like, okay, that's beautiful. And then it's like, now play. The game's a Rubik's Cube. And you're like, wait, what's happening?
There's also something really cool about, you know, I think about a game like Breath of the Wild, which, again, one of my favorites of all time. You know, Link comes out of the cave, and he's like on the mountain, and he's just looking at the world, right? And it's like, well, what do I do now? And that's the amazing part is you can do anything you want in that world. You know, it just it leaves it up to you to decide what you want to do next. And I always think about a game like that where it's very minimalistic in as far as the story, because you don't really know what's happening at the start of Breath of the Wild. You don't really know what's going on, and you kind of learn the story as you progress. But it's so cool just to, you know, to basically be in control of the character and the world and be able to do whatever you want. And I think that's very powerful as well. It doesn't have to be a narrative driven story all the time. It could be just this open world landscape, and it's really up to you to decide what you want to do, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I think, you know, people have heard in other mediums this notion of show not tell, right? And I think from my perspective, video games need to have an addendum, a corollary that's, you know, do not show. I think even showing the showing can be active. It is an interactive medium. And I think uncovering the story or having the story laid out in front of you because of the way you are interacting with the game is always going to be preferable to just starting your game off with 10 minutes of cutscenes and or things that aren't really part of what you're doing in the game. I want to know what this I want to know the vocabulary I share with this game world. And I want to know it immediately. I want to understand how you want me to interact with this world, not who these characters are. The character is me. You know, yes, maybe I'm playing as Abe. Maybe I'm playing as Nathan Drake. It doesn't matter. It's still me. It's my decisions. So don't spend an hour telling me who this character is. Let me discover that and figure it out and find it by doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wanted to bring it back to Oddworld. I have not played it. I'm very shallow here. I find the character designs of the world not anything I want to spend time with. They seem gross to me. Like, they seem like nightmares. Like, these are the things that crawl out of my closet and scare me.
I mean, that's very intentional, right? Yes. That's the point. But yeah.
Yes, but it's just like gross.
It's this intersection between cute side-scrolling mascot and kind of hideous nightmare creature. I think that's where the Oddworld wants to sit.
So, but this game just starts with, like, again, I haven't played it. I know I could just download it. I'm a PS Plus subscriber. But it starts with, is it a catch up? Is it a previously on? Or is it like, you've played the last five of these games, here's where we are, cutscene?
It's one of those games where it starts, you know, you're in this predicament, and then it's like, you know, it was like 2 weeks ago or something. And
yeah, something like that.
It goes back a little bit. But it doesn't really, you know, to Jeff's point, it doesn't really give you a backstory about who you are and what this world is and what's going on. It just kind of puts you in there and you know, it's up to you to kind of figure out what's happening.
Yeah, it starts with a really cool sequence, which I wish I would have been able to play, which is you're on this moving train, it's being attacked. It's like, wow, that's an awesome sequence.
Yeah, I'm sitting there waiting to take control, you know, and it's not happening. It's like, well, what's going on here, you know?
You watch this really cool animated version of that scene, and then it does say like 2 weeks ago or something, or, you know, 7 days earlier, whatever it is. And then the 7 days earlier or the 2 weeks earlier is a bunch of people going, yay, Abe saved us, which I assume is because of the previous game, but I just have no memory of if that's true or not. I think
this game is essentially Abe's Exodus, right? Like it's just a remake of that. So the first game, Abe's Odyssey, he saved the world, he saved everyone. So that was probably the beginning of that, right? So to your point, I mean, if you've never played these games, if you're not familiar with what Oddworld is, you're not really going to have any idea what's happening here.
Right. Yeah. It's very strange. I think eventually the game's mechanics get interesting, and you've got all these little, you know, minion characters that you can move around and do certain things with, and it does get interesting. But it is a constant and repeated, in my opinion, mistake that a lot of really smart developers seem to fall into, and I don't understand it, and it bums me out every single time I see it. So anyway, Christian Spicer, what is on your playlist?
Well, you were talking about a game that just pulls you in and tells you. I was like, oh, you're setting me up. Like, you know exactly what's on my playlist. That's not it. I wanted to pull this up. There it is. Before Your Eyes, which Sean Kittleson talked about. Was that last week? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think it was last week.
On this very show.
Oh, no, 2 weeks ago. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, Anthony was last week. I was provided a copy, a review code, a free copy of this game. I'm going to try to not get emotional as I talk about it.
Wow.
It is one of it's recency. I literally played it Sunday morning, today as we're recording this. One of the most impactful multimedia experiences I've had. And so I will back up a little bit. I'm not going to spoil anything about the game, but it is a game that is controlled by your eyes when you blink.
This is a game on mobile, right?
I played on PC on Steam.
Oh, okay. And you turn your camera on to play it.
You do not have to use your camera. I believe you can click. I did not play that way. I did have to restart. Like, initially it didn't recognize my camera, it just didn't look right. So I restarted, launched back, and it worked flawlessly. And you calibrate your eyes quickly. But again, it gets you in and playing very quickly. The one thing I did not know at first is it's like blink here, and you actually use your mouse as well to like look around in the world. So you put your mouse over a thing and then blink, and that's how you move like a intro screen forward. That was not super, super clear to me. But you progress by blinking. Again, this experience might be very different for other people if it doesn't recognize them well or their webcam doesn't work well. Mine worked flawlessly. It felt like I didn't notice any misread blinks or it moving when I didn't want it to. And it is a 90-minute to 2-hour story. I recommend you play it in one sitting. And it is a story about someone's life and reflecting on it and looking back on it. And I'm going to be very general here. I do not know if it will have the same impact on people who aren't parents and on people who haven't, I don't want to say don't, but probably also don't, haven't spent a good chunk of their life questioning whether or not they're a creative failure. And I'm very privileged. I'm very grateful to be able to do what I do. And I realize the success that I've had. But I think self-doubt is common. Depression runs in my family. I'm sweating. I'm being more personal than I wanted to be. but my God, this game, the way it connects you to the story being told and brings twists where twists are needed, and the fact that you're advancing things by blinking connects you to this experience in a way that I think just moving in a 3D space wouldn't, or just watching it as a film that advances on its own time wouldn't. You don't want to blink sometimes. And you do. I mean, I was bawling. I'm just I'm crying and I have this and it's like, oh God. And then it blinks and it moves ahead 3 times. And I'm like, no, I just didn't want.
That's wild. And is that part of the intended experience? Like, is it built
I have to
anticipate that?
I have to think yes. Like, concluding it, I don't feel like I missed anything because of the way I played it. I read one review after I played it, and it was like, it's frustrating and insufferable. You're holding your eyes open so you don't miss any of the scene that you're in. And to me, it's supposed to be that way. You miss it because you blink. Like it's right. You in this moment.
Yeah.
Again, I got a code for it. I think maybe it's $10 or $15. It's incredible. I cannot, again, recency, because I just played it, but I cannot recommend this experience enough from
there's
my point of view.
Nothing that sounds less appealing to me than control a game with your eyelids, but hearing you talk about it, I have to play this. I'm so excited to play this.
It's phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal. And I think that control method, again, you can use a mouse and click through it, but that control method, it feels new and innovative, and it feels like it brings me into the experience in a way that clicking A, press X to mourn. Like, what a joke. Here it's like, well, you advanced 5 things because you're crying.
It's a wild thing to have part of a control structure of a narrative experience be something that you only have, partial control over, some involuntary thing. I blink often without knowing.
I mean, you watch this stream. If anybody watches this, I'm a mess. I blink a lot.
Both of us are like Hugh Grant over here with our blinks.
Yeah, I need to play the game. I need to have Mark Zuckerberg play the game. You watch his like Senate testimony.
Mark Zuckerberg's just like he's like the done quick guy of this game.
No, he's the opposite. He doesn't get past the start screen. It's like blink, it's like, and he's like, I'm blinking.
It's like, I don't understand what the big deal about this game is. It's one screen forever.
blink to start.
I did. I'm pretty sure I did.
That's funny.
But it's an experience. It's a one time. I don't have a desire to play this again. Maybe try to see if I can see different things. Like, that isn't what entices me. But it is a game I will think about for a very long time. And I think that's a testament to it. I'm super glad. I don't know if Skybound didn't pick it up, if someone else won it, but I'm so glad it's out. And I cannot recommend it. Before your eyes, it's an incredible experience. Please play it in one sitting. And I hope that your webcam works well for you.
How long is the game overall?
Under 2 hours. I think it was about 90-100 minutes, something like that. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
I'm going to try to play that this week. That sounds incredible. I'm glad you spoke so passionately about it, because I had forgotten that Sean mentioned it and wanted to check it out just out of curiosity. But now it sounds like it's something that we shouldn't miss, or I shouldn't miss.
It will wreck you. So tell your family. I'm in here in my office alone, like with headphones on, just knowing what people outside hear.
Okay. That is Before Your Eyes, and it is on mobile and on Steam, evidently.
I think it's just on PC. I don't think it's on mobile.
Really? Because I thought he mentioned it, like they tested it on all these different, I guess actual camera webcams.
Yeah, I think it might be coming, but I think it's only on
PC. Feels like talk about a game that uses a camera. It feels like it needs to be on mobile, right? Yeah. That's where people are staring at the screen and real close, and it's got a camera already and it's set up.
It's real nice.
Interesting. All right. Let me thank our second sponsor right now, which is Third Love. I love when Third Love sponsors the show. My wife loves it as well. She's a huge fan of Third Love. Third Love is all about creating the perfect fitting bra. And they have a number of techniques to do this. Now, my wife swears by Third Love at this point. It's the only bra she will wear. Christian, I understand your wife loves Third Love as well, right?
Yeah, and I said it last time, and I'll say it again. Another recent more purchases have happened since the last time I mentioned more purchases have happened.
Yeah, that's my wife is always like, do you have a promo code for Third Love? I'm like, I think it only works for your first purchase. I don't know. Anyway, you should check this out because designed for the perfect fit, as I said. How do they do that? Well, they have this thing called the Fit Finder Quiz. You just answer a few simple questions to find your perfect fitting bra in 60 seconds. Not sure about your size? Easy. You take the third love online fit finder quiz. You find the size and style that's right for you. Many, many women are wearing bras that are not the correct size and shape. And in fact, Third Love has half sizes, which makes it even more precise. And they also, you know, over 15 million women have taken that Fit Finder quiz. So they've been able to iterate on it, refine it, and make it perfect so that you find that perfect fit. In fact, they have the perfect fit promise. They stand behind their products. If you don't love it, every customer has 60 days to return their bra, and then returns and exchanges are free and easy. Also, they have fit stylists that are available to help via chat or email if you have any questions. It's pretty great. And the comfort and quality is their top priority. They make sure they use these memory foam cups, no slip straps, scratch-free bands. Like I said, it's my wife's favorite bra. It's the only bra she wants to wear at this point. Plus, Third Love donates all of their gently used return bras to women in need, supporting charities in their local San Francisco Bay Area and across the United States. So far, Third Love has donated over $20 million in bras, which is pretty wonderful. So Third Love knows there is a perfect bra for anyone. So right now, they're offering listeners of DLC 10% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/DLC now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 10% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/DLC for 10% off today. thirdlove.com/DLC. As I mentioned, I have been playing God of War. I intended only to download it and just see the 60 frames per second on PlayStation 5. And then I just got completely sucked into that game. And I'm like, am I replaying God of War for 2018 right now? Because it's so incredible. And I may very well do that. The silky smooth 60 frames is incredible. I'm playing it on a TV that has HDR, and I didn't have HDR the first time I played it. So that is eye popping. I mean, if this game is 2 years old, 3 years old, excuse me. And if it came out today, I feel like it would, you know, it would feel like a completely contemporary modern game. It is extraordinary. It is such an incredible game. I love it. I mean,
I'm playing it for the same reasons as you. Like I'm going through it again because I didn't have a great TV the first time around. I only had a base PS4, so I didn't have the Pro at the time. So being able to play it on a PS5 with HDR and 60 FPS and all that stuff, it's almost transformative, really.
Yeah, it's so silky smooth and beautiful. Oh, and man, that single camera, uncut, single shot through the entire game, I can't believe they pulled that off. And I have a hard time expressing how much it means to that experience. It is unlike any other video game I've ever played. And it's truly an achievement. So I might be playing it again. I might be playing through the whole stinking game again because it looks so fresh and new on my PlayStation 5. We did get a listener suggested, or excuse me, a listener submitted game review. This comes to us from Jordan. Jordan says, hi, DLC. Since you've quite reasonably expressed reservations about the story themes in It Takes Two, I wanted to dig into the gameplay. It's an absolute game of the year contender, in my opinion, and I'm so impressed with what Joseph Ferris and his team put together. It Takes Two is a masterpiece of game design with seemingly endless creativity and variety. There are so many distinct gameplay ideas, and every 20 minutes, my friend and I were doing something new over the 10 to 12 hours the game lasted. Right when something is about to overstay its welcome, the game dropped it for something else. Whether open world exploration, puzzle solving, creating music, playing mini games, experiencing linear Uncharted-like set pieces full of explosive spectacle, or simply looking at a gorgeous skybox while you're miniaturized inside a snow globe looking at the outside world, Haze Light is just showing off nonstop for the entire run of the game. It's not just quantity, though, it's quality. The game controls better than most other platformers, and despite the variety, everything was just tuned perfectly. What surprised me most, though, was just how utterly gorgeous this game is. It looks stunning on next-gen consoles. I played on Series X, running at a smooth 60 frames per second while looking like a Pixar film. And somehow its visuals are as varied and high quality as its gameplay. I was not expecting to be totally blown away by how technically and artistically incredible It Takes Two is. Anyway, I totally get your concerns and hesitations about the story. I just hope you give it a shot anyway. The story is pure camp, and while it's not that great, it's skippable if you choose. The game is worth it for everything else it does. Finally, while it's well known that there is a buddy pass that lets two people play with only one purchase, what's lesser known is that the buddy pass is also a 90-minute demo, which both people can play for free. Thanks for years of entertainment, Jordan. Thank you, Jordan. Christian has, you know, expressed on Twitter and elsewhere, I think maybe even here on the show, not interested in playing this game. And I've been looking for a buddy. There's a lot of pressure to find someone to play It Takes Two with because it's a commitment. It's asking for commitment, multi hours and scheduling sessions to play. And I've been trying to find a friend.
I mean,
to do
and
that with.
Valheim has a VR patch that you texted know, me dude. About. So there's that's the thing.
Yes.
You're not optimistic.
Exactly. There's a lot of games competing for my time. I'm not optimistic. I really want to play this. I know. And then I started God of War like an idiot and played many hours of that. Anyway, I really want to play It Takes Two. I just need to find that person. That person. You know, I need that person. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Modern Vintage Gamer, it has been so much fun having you on the show. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me, gents. It was an absolute blast to be on. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Tell folks where they can keep up with you and the things that you do online.
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter, and that's where I normally hang out day to day. And my handle is at Modern Vintage G. I'm also on YouTube at Modern Vintage Gamer. And I usually drop a video at least once a week on a Monday. So if you like getting geeky and technical with all things video games, game consoles, retro hardware, check out my channel. It's a lot of fun most of the time. And that's really about it. Just YouTube and Twitter is really where you can find me.
Yeah, you and Christian were having this incredible conversation as we were getting the show ready, and I was like, "Oh, we're burning cast here. This is it was great. You guys were going off on retro arcade sticks and stuff. It was really fun to listen to."
Yeah, I'll you know, continue on your channel. It's fantastic. Like your stuff on YouTube is absolutely fantastic. It's like I've watched enough of it, seeking it out. That now, like, as much as I hate the algorithm knows, and it's like, oh, Monday, and my internet's like, new video, and I'm like, okay, algorithm, you win this time.
I used to, before COVID, right, so I had this plan about, I do YouTube, and I've been doing it for a long time, but I'm not one of these YouTubers that, like, drops a video every day, because I just don't have the time, right? So what I normally do is I'll do a quality video, most of the time at least, every week. And the thought process was it would be on a Monday morning at, you know, 7 a.m. Was when I would drop the video. And before COVID, I did that because, you know, you go into work Monday morning, you know, you hate your boss and everything. So the first thing you do is read email and watch YouTube. So you got this MVG video waiting for you to have an escape from reality for, you know, for a little while before the first meeting of the day begins. But it's been great, you know, and I appreciate all the fans and all the listeners that have jumped on board, especially the last, you know, 18 months. The channel is going really well.
Yeah, I need to remember things. Oh, I didn't know I'd bring this up, but I saw a tweet where it's like, remember how your dad loved diners and jukeboxes? That's you right now with old games and arcades. And I was like, I feel seen. Like, this tweet gets, as my dad built his hobby model trains, my daughter sat in here and watched me try to get a modern fight stick working on my analog Mega SG. Like, what are you doing, Dad? I'm like, I'm busy. Mind your business.
Yeah. It's important stuff right there.
Yes,
it is.
I mean, Punisher's not going to play itself. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I gotta get the experience.
Awesome. All right, Christian, what do you got going on this week?
New newsletter should be dropping. I said last week it probably wouldn't drop last week, and I was right. But you can subscribe to that at tinyletter.com/Christian Spicer. As I think, I usually do about two a month, and as I kind of, I have like four drafts started that like then new things come up, and I'm like, I want to talk about this. This is wild. But speaking of wanting E3 back, there's been news these past few weeks. It's not, I think I find a meaty issue I'm going to dive into, and then a bigger T-bone steak lands on my plate. But I think something's coming out this week. And Twitter at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. And then I will say that I've been putting a lot of time into the deluxe edition pages of Consequences. And I'm so excited.
Yeah, you showed me a preview of that. It looks sick.
I did. I'm making what I'd want from like a, you know, director's commentary, kind of like notes on the sides of scripts. And I'm very excited. It's progressing well. And I'm very excited for folks to get their copies.
Awesome. Well, for me, you can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I have a number of other shows for you to check out if you're so inclined, including The Dungeon Run, which is back, baby, back. We're two episodes in on Twitch now, on YouTube, as a podcast. Lots of ways to watch The Dungeon Run. All you got to do is search for it. We're twitch.tv/The Dungeon Run. And this week is going to be a big one. We have gotten ourselves into quite the predicament, the heroes of Bingle. Dungeon Run, of course, is my big live play Dungeons & Dragons, basically a fantasy storytelling adventure. And what an adventure it is. The team was doing a heist. Things went horribly wrong, as they often do. And now it's turned into a rescue mission. We have half the team inside the sewers being attacked by monsters. And one of the team has been shackled and brought inside the mansion they were trying to steal from. So it's going to be a wild episode. You don't have to have any previous knowledge of the show to jump in on Wednesday night, 6 p.m. Pacific time, twitch.tv/The Dungeon Run. Also, the Slash Filmcast is where I talk about movies and TV shows. You can find that at slashfilmcast.com. I do a comedy science show called We Have Concerns. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com. And I do a show about football, in fact, the fan-controlled football league, on Thursdays at 2:30 p.m. at twitch.tv/FCF. You can always email us here, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. And let's get our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion. Demetrius, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I'm getting really big onto photography. I mean, obviously, as a YouTuber, I've got, camera equipment and stuff, and I've always really been just using it for just, filming B-roll and stuff like that. But I've been spending more time outside and, taking photographs and learning how to take more of those artistic shots. So I would say get outside, get your camera. It doesn't matter if it's your DSLR or your iPhone, and take some photos because there's some really, really pretty landscape out there.
That's great. Especially as spring is springing, it's great. Great suggestion. Christian Spicer, what about you? You got a parting gift?
I have a parting gift and a comment. As Valinus in the chat mentions Invincible on Amazon.
Oh yeah. So good.
The platinum age of hero comics content being made. Just Invincible, Falcon Winter Soldier, WandaVision still exists. Like, there's someone who's just discovering that. Snyder Cut, Wonder Woman, all of the MCU movies. It's like there's so much out there, and it's almost all so very, very good. We are spoiled. I want to recognize how spoiled we are. Harley Quinn on HBO Max. What a treat of an animated show. It's also good. My parting gift would be an old school Nerf football, not the Vortex, not the harder plastic one with like the 20-foot tail that you can throw farther than that old Powerade Michael Vick commercial that got the internet by storm before the internet was virality was a thing. I mean, the kind that in a few years, a squirrel will eat a chunk out of and you have foam everywhere. And
do they still sell those?
They do. I got one recently. Wow. Ours is technically a junior, I think. Maybe that's just what they're called. But it's incredible. I'm having tons of fun throwing it around with my kids.
Don't let it fall in the pool, though. It'll never, the water will never come out of it.
Never come. Oh, you're squeezing it forever. Part of it gets sucked into the filter in the pool, but yet the ball's still complete. Like, you don't know how that works. It's just like a time loop. But they're great, man. They're fun. You get a little reckless inside, and they're fun outside too, because no matter who you are, you know, best quarterback in the world, it's still a little bit of a knuckleball because they're so light. The wind will just take it. So like, you could be, you know, Randy Moss in their prime, and you'll still hit you in your face 1 out of 100 times because you're like, I got it. And it wiggles. Classic Nerf foam football. Tons of fun.
Can I tell you what we used to do with the Nerf football? My dad, on Sundays when we'd watch 49er games growing up in the Bay Area, my dad would sit on the couch at the back of the living room, and the hallway was parallel to his seating position. And you could go down the hallway, and then there was like a little cutout window where I could see into the couch, and then that cutout window would lead into the rest of the wall, and then I could come around to the right in front of the television. So I would stand in the back of the hallway, and my dad would yell hike, and I would run down the hallway, and he would either throw it to me through that hole, or as I made a right turn in front of the television. And sometimes he'd fake it to me in front of the hole, and we would play for hours like that. I'd be running routes and catching the ball. My dad would be throwing it to me from the couch. And it made my mom so furious because she's like, you're going to hit something. And it was Nerf, so we didn't care.
Yes, like I said, you get reckless inside. Best. Like, again, 99% of the time, you are fine. And then it's like that 1% of the time, you do hit that thing that you weren't supposed to hit. And you're like, oh, no. Yeah. But
there was that one time. There was the one time where my mom had the Christmas ornament that her grandmother had made by hand. And she'd hung it from the ceiling. My dad's pass sailed a little high and it smacked into that bad boy and knocked it into a bazillion pieces. Yeah, not a good day for the Kanata family.
Anyway, classic Nerf football. Go get one.
They're anyway, fun. Now my parents are divorced. classic Nerf football. My parting gift. I know that I mentioned this last week, ladies and gentlemen, but it's the only thing I watch now are Lego YouTube videos. I have fallen so far down the rabbit hole of Lego YouTube. It's all I watch. I watch it before I go to bed. I watch it for hours. I'm fascinated by the world of MOCs, which stands for my own creation. People, absurd levels of creativity and skill creating these MOCs. I told you about Brick Vault, and I've mentioned a couple of other YouTube videos, channels, I think. I found a new one that I'm going to mention because I think it's delightful. It's called Sacred Bricks. And it's this kid, I assume, the voice sounds very young, and he's telling you how to, like, tutorials on how to do these incredibly complicated expert-level design ideas, you know, how to do rock formations or how to build fences or realistic-looking this or that. And he's doing it with such snarky commentary, it makes me laugh. I usually don't, you know, go for the real snarky YouTubers, but man, the combination of like super nerdy expert level Lego design with, you know, self-deprecating lines about it's very funny. It's very funny. So I recommend Sacred Bricks. I think this kid deserves a lot more subscribers than he has. I'm delighted by it. All right. We got a listener-suggested parting gift sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes from Clay Westing. Clay writes, I've been listening to your show for a few years now. Wanted to send in a parting gift. My parting gift this week is to go sound recording out in nature. This actually pairs very well with Demetrius's take pictures out in nature. Mm-hmm. Sound recording. We always think to pull out our cameras when we see a beautiful vista, but we often forget about the sounds of nature, be it chirping birds with gentle leafy breezes or the tapping waters of a lake, or I guess it's lapping waters of a lake, excuse me. As a sound designer, I personally use a Zoom H2 handheld field recorder, but you can always use the microphone right there on your smartphone. You'll be surprised how much listening to a unique sound you recorded makes you feel like you're back in the place where that memory was captured. Thanks for always creating such fun and wholesome content every week. The show has always been a stable and positive treat whenever I need the pick-me-up. Thank you, Clay. That is really cool. You know, I think about professional sound recorders, like our friend Rob Kreckel, doing that kind of thing, but I've never really thought about doing it on an amateur level. And yeah, that sounds like an awesome idea. So go out, take some photos, record some audio. Sounds like a good twofer.
I did that in New York. Once my dad left me a series of clues, my uncle left me a series of clues, and I had to scale buildings to find it. I don't know why he didn't just tell me the sound again. He was like, go here and listen to the rhythm of the train tracks. And I was like, thanks, Ankh. But I did them all. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, I got a few new suits out of it.
You got to do them all. I would get really into the sound recording thing, but then I would be worried that my entire city would be destroyed and that would be all that's left of me.
No. The big bad knew what I was doing, so she was cool.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Demetrius Giannakis and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for watching the show live and hanging out with all of us in real time. We appreciate you. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for making those bumpers. And thank you to each and one, every one of you who download and listen to us. We appreciate your time, and we'll be back next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.